police knocked on the door, and lo and behold, I looked up. It was maybe five or six police officers standing in the living room. And they said, we have an arrest warrant for Eddie Baker.
I'm shocked by the sheer number of people in the United States who are innocent and wrongly convicted.
Baby's crying.
They asked me about a murder, which I had no knowledge of. And they begin to beat me. I was beaten pretty bad.
Daddy's in prison, yeah, but who gives it?
America convicts more innocent people than any other country in the Western civilized world. Thousands and thousands of Americans are languishing in prison for crimes they didn't do.
They would say, are you ready to tell us what happened? And I would tell the officer, I don't know anything about a murder. As much as I hate to say that I did, but I signed a statement. I couldn't take the beating no more.
Nobody in America wants to take a look at its frailties and its mistakes.
From that moment on, I spent 26 years of my life in jail.
And Ed Baker would still be there if it were not for one man, unordained minister Jim McCluskey.
At the age of 37, I was doing pretty well in the business world, but there was an emptiness that gnawed at me. I was haunted by the proposition that I didn't feel my life was authentic. It was a very stable, secure, comfortable life, but it was empty. At the same time, my Christian faith started to really take root for the first time in my life on a serious basis. And the words of Christ in the New Testament really became my food and drink. If you lose your life for my sake, you will find your life.
Ordained by conscience alone, McCluskey has personally freed 45 wrongfully convicted murderers throughout the United States. Small wonder those who know and love him call him the divine detective. From a cramped office in the American University town of Princeton, New Jersey, McCluskey runs Centurion Ministries. The people he saved include Ed Baker, who did 26 years behind bars, and Michael Austin, who served 27 years for murders they did not commit.
The best way I can describe Jim is that he's God sent. That is the best way I can do it. God sent him into my life just to do what he did for me, and that was to establish my innocence.
God sent Jim to me as an angel. And I used to think that you send the best angel you had to come get me.
That's one way. Shit. Damn. Come on, buddy. Let me in. All right.
We're heading over to the crime scene, which is in basically central Newark. In this investigative work for all these years, I've never staked out anyone. I never carry a gun or any kind of a weapon. And I've never followed anybody.
There's little of the parish priest in Jim McCluskey. He's streetwise, can hold a drink or two, and never pushes religion, invariably keeping his faith to himself.
I've had more than a couple inmates on the telephone trying to get our attention and convince us to take their case. They bring up Jesus to me. And you know what I say to them when they bring up Jesus? I say, let me tell you something. Jesus has nothing to do with this case. The only thing we're interested in are the facts of your case. Did you have any role in this homicide or did you not? So let's put Jesus aside.
I was looking for this little guy who was a priest, who was going to be calm, who was going to be nice and talk soft. But he came in there and he said, listen, I'm not a guy that take a lot of bullshit. If I find out that you was involved in this case, that you lied to me, I'm going to cut you loose like a hot potato.
These are the kind of buildings you see in block after block, like Berlin, East Berlin post-war, Berlin post-war. And this is where the getaway driver was, right here. Yeah. Oh, this is one way. Darn it. God, what a pain in the neck. Originally, I thought God was calling me to go to the seminary, graduate, and become a Presbyterian church pastor. But things changed. So when I'm at the seminary, I did my field education work at Trenton State Prison as a student chaplain. I chose the prison ministry because It was more curiosity than anything else. And in that capacity, I would go cell to cell. There were 40 men in 40 different cells. And one of the 40, Mr. De Los Santos, all he would talk about was his innocence. And he provoked me. And when I would go back to the seminary, all I could think about were his pleas of innocence. I found and hired a great attorney up in Hoboken. And together, after 3.5 years of work, we freed Mr. De Los Santos in the summer of 1983. But in working for De Los Santos, I had met two other New Jersey lifers in whose innocence I had come to believe. Now my dilemma was, am I going to go on and get ordained to become a church pastor? Do I go down that road or begin to devote my life to the convicted innocent? And I chose the latter. This is 1981. When I started doing this work, I've been in Harlem and South Central LA and South Dallas and Chicago, the Cabrini housing projects in Chicago. The only time I've ever felt that I was in danger, and I've been in crack houses everywhere. The only time I felt that I was in danger was when a blue-collar, suburbanite, white male, he opened the door with a German Shepherd and a gun right in my chest. Oh, okay. I mean, I've been in battle in Vietnam, and when they're shooting bullets at you, it's kind of you're out of body experience. Yeah, you're looking down on it, you know? Yeah. But when I left, that's when I started to shake.
McCloskey's earthly divinity stays deeply hidden beneath an exterior of vintage tough guy gumshoe. Superficially, he's to saintliness what the Pope is to mud wrestling as he pounds the streets, knocking on doors, persuading, cajoling, occasionally flashing an intimidatory stare before reverting to a beatific smile. He remains perpetually incredulous that in his beloved America, innocent men can be so easily convicted of capital crimes. Michael Austin remembers how false evidence took him to a life sentence.
One of their primary questions were, where were you at on April 29th, 5:45? So I felt a little sense of security knowing that I was at work.
What was the total value of the prosecution evidence against you?
One witness. He basically said, this is the guy I saw walk over and shoot him.
And what description was given of you?
5'8", light complexion.
5'8" tall and a light complexion.
Right.
And you are how tall?
6'4¾".
And you're very black?
Completely.
So you got a defense lawyer?
Right.
Any good?
No.
What was wrong with him?
Eventually we found out he was a drug addict and an alcoholic.
And you were found guilty?
By jury.
And you were sentenced to?
Life, 15 years.
You were put in a cell for life plus 15 years.
It was a feeling of hopelessness that I had no power over my life. The inside of your body is just screaming, but no one can hear you.
Ed Baker lost a quarter of a century of his freedom before McCloskey's intervention showed yet again the rotten system that put an innocent man away for life.
My lawyer, he never came to the jail to visit me. I always had to go to the courthouse.
Never?
Never.
And when you met, how long did you meet for?
Maybe a half an hour.
And that was about three visits in the year before you were on trial?
Yes.
And did he ask you sensible questions?
Well, he did ask me about my alibi, which I thought he would take the information and utilize it better than what he did, but he didn't. He actually did his investigation in my case over the phone.
He never left the office?
Never left the office.
And McCloskey won't leave his office for you unless you meet his most exacting standards and demands as a potentially innocent man. And, here's a bit of religion creeping in, it helps if you've led a life worth saving.
We pick the people we choose to serve. And so part of our criteria is, are these basically good people?
Would you deal with a violent, drug-dealing pedophile who you believe, honestly, is innocent?
No. We would have just cut him loose.
Would you let him die knowing he's innocent?
Yes. Why should we give ourselves over to a person with this character, and this person could very well go back on the streets, and do bad things to good people. And what does that do to us?
In that sense, you act like God.
Yes, we do. You're a human being. You have to make choices, whether you're acting like God or not, whether it's a God-like decision. You have to make hard choices.
I'd go straight up and hang right.
I'll go straight up for a couple blocks before I hang a right.
Today, I'm with McCloskey driving through the poverty-stricken war zone of Newark, New Jersey, as the divine detective tries once more to break down the evidence that has sent a man he believes to be innocent to prison for life. Guyron Walker is in his 23rd year for the murder of two police officers in 1985. The murder of policemen invariably produces a fevered backlash. But now, McCloskey's received the names of two men, allegedly the true killers, plus independent witnesses to a confession. This break has put the divine detective right back on the streets.
All right, now, get my bearings again. Now, let's see. This was the third Newark street map I've gone through on this case. Okay. Now, where I'm going to go now, I want to go up to one of the brothers who received a confession. He's usually in jail, but he's not now. He's on the streets. So we'll give it a crack and see if by any chance I can catch up with him or somebody can tell me where he is. All right, see you in a bit.
Yep. Yeah, we'll be here.
He wants to make this call on his own. He has his own techniques, and my presence would intrude. He works like a hybrid investigative reporter, private eye, and detective. With a strong faith background, one expects a softer edge somewhere. But no, McCloskey is utterly self-contained, self-confident, and surprisingly self-reliant.
I'm a lifelong bachelor. I have, in the past, yearned for love, for marriage, but I've come to understand that that's not for me. When I go home at night after a tiring day at work, I like being alone. But if other people would think I'm odd, that is very understandable. But I thank God for this odd life.
Guyron Walker's only hope of freedom is McCloskey's personal mission to tramp the streets scouring for evidence to prove his innocence. There are no quick fixes, no 1,000-volt smart lawyers, no evidential miracles with last-minute happy endings. It's shoe leather, snatched black coffees, intuition, and, McCloskey would argue, just the hint of occasional divine intervention.
This is Jim McCloskey. I'm at the Days Inn in Georgia, visiting with...
He's already hunted down two key witnesses who lied to save their skins and put Guyron Walker behind bars for life. Incredibly, McCloskey quarried something decent inside each one and got both to admit the truth of their perjury. One even agreed to sign an affidavit. He spoke to McCloskey on tape.
The whole statement that I gave was a save my ass statement.
Right.
We lied to get ourselves out of trouble. That's the whole thing.
A common cause for wrongful convictions is the use by police and prosecutors of common criminals who are in deep trouble with that same law enforcement agency, and they strike a deal with the devil that if you testify in such and such manner against this particular defendant, we will recommend to the judge that you not go to jail. So therefore, they lie against innocent people to save their own skin.
It was something that a scared young man had said to get from staying in the hot water because he was in fear of his life.
And a scared young man, meaning you.
Me.
Okay.
I love people. I don't care who they are, what they've done. It matters nothing to me. The past is the past. I think they resonate with that, and they trust me, develop a rapport, and they feel comfortable, and they come forward finally with the truth of the matter.
You said here in your statement that they were discussing plans for a robbery. True or false?
False.
On the day of the crime, did Guyron Walker plan a robbery?
Nope. My statement ain't nothing but a damn lie.
All right, that's very clear. Thank you.
How did you make out?
He wasn't home. Oh. Nobody answered the bell. Then I had the telephone number.
Yeah.
Then I called the number of their apartment from right outside the building,
and got a disconnected thing. So I'm not positive he still lives here. That's where we are at this point.
No, it's nothing like TV. Dead ends far outnumber the hits. McCluskey has the patience of Job, knowing it can take a decade just to investigate one case. In fact, he does what a harassed, overworked, and occasionally corrupt police force fails to do. There are no grubby compromise deals, no false evidence beaten out of the vulnerable, no confessions wrung from the terrified. One man who was at the sharpest end of numerous murder investigations was an all-too-honest police chief, Frank Friel, former head of Philadelphia's Organized Crime Homicide Squad. He saw how the over-enthusiasm of his own colleagues put an innocent man in jail for life.
It really wasn't a case of this victim being framed. It was a case of the investigators at the time believing that he was guilty of the two murders. And in their zealous attempt to put him away, they systematically excluded all evidence of innocence.
In that sense, you are creating evidence. It is a lie of omission.
They never created evidence. They brought forth only evidence that would guarantee, in this case, his conviction.
But you believe that their motives were, one has to use the word, benign?
They were well-intentioned. They were under a lot of pressure to make an arrest in this case.
Can I raise with you now the false witnesses who work for the prosecution, often because they are inmates of a prison and often because it's to their advantage to lie?
It's a serious, serious problem. There's too much of a motive to lie.
Are these factors? Shoddy police work, the lack of skilled detectives, overwhelming caseloads, pressure from superiors and the community, and the detective's own ambition to solve the crime.
They're all factors as far as what may lead someone to be less than 100% diligent in moving through the investigation in an objective fashion.
And nobody really cares too much, do they?
No.
These are working people from the ghettos,
right,
from the slums.
Right.
The white middle class and the votes don't follow the injustices, do they?
All of that is true.
Frank Friel, a cop with a conscience, decided to reinvestigate his colleague's case after it had clearly led to a wrongful conviction. He succeeded, but the reaction...
I was a pariah for a long period of time, ostracized from the group that I worked with. The system puts up such barricades, they're ironclad, and it wears you out very quickly. And it is not an epiphany. There is no light going on. The system doesn't embrace that type of change. They will fight every step of the way. And had I not experienced what I experienced, I wouldn't have believed that. And I could tell you that there's very few people who are capable, either intellectually or emotionally, in doing that for a living.
And it's not just the shenanigans of dodgy coppers who can make the innocent guilty. The next line of defense, the protective firewall of lawyers on both sides, is sometimes only paper thin.
Now, the prosecutor will cast a blind eye to the deficiencies because the police with whom they have to work every day and depend on them, they don't want to create an adversarial relationship. So the prosecutors go with the quote-unquote evidence presented to them by the police.
Well, okay, I'm not worried. I've got defense counsel.
First of all, every innocent person who's been convicted in America that I'm aware of was indigent. They have no money. They have no resources to fight for their freedom and to defend themselves. So they are dependent on the state to provide public assistance. Now we get to the jury. They, too, go with the flow and would most likely believe that the police and prosecutors, they certainly know what they're doing. And they would never arrest innocent people and charge them with a crime, a heinous crime of this nature. So the jury has a strong presumption of guilt, and they readily believe the evidence offered by the state. Case closed, conviction secured, off to prison for the rest of your life.
Prosecutorial misconduct, much like the police eagerness to get a conviction, is a very real factor. There has to be a balance wherein a prosecutor is not necessarily gauged by the number or percentage of convictions, but the fundamental fairness that is called into play during the entire trial.
The presumption of guilt.
Yes. In many cases, a presumption that the police wouldn't have arrested this person unless they were guilty.
I'm inside New Jersey State Prison. The usual incarceration smells, urine and carbolic soap, the echoes and faint reverberations of indistinct noise, the same dead feeling of hopelessness. When you're in for murder, the appeals process can only address procedural irregularities from the original trial.
Is this Mr. Walker?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Tom Mangold, the reporter. Thanks very much.
So, for people like Guyron Walker, no matter how flawed the original evidence, no matter how unsafe the conviction now looks, the chances of freedom are a hopeless dream.
When I was in the interrogation room, that's when they said they wanted me for the murder of two sheriff officers. And they hollering and stuff like that, saying, "Oh, bull, you know, you did this, you did that, you killed one of us." And I'm like, "I ain't did nothing," you know. And then they're like, "Bullshit, you lying." And I'm like, "Nah, I had nothing to do with it." I had like 8 alibi witnesses and 16 or more character witnesses.
What I can't understand is, why should the police pick on you? Do you have any previous convictions?
Never been arrested before.
Yeah. Were you a bad boy on the streets?
No.
No? Well, why should the cops pick on you?
Two law enforcement officers got killed, and somebody had to pay for the crime.
This is Hello, how do you do?
Guyron Walker's mother lives in a pin-neat, warm and welcoming home in Newark.
After you. Go ahead.
She knows her son is innocent, she says, because he was with her at the time of the murder. Well, she would say that, wouldn't she? Of course, she could always be lying about her son, but instinct tells those who meet her that deception really isn't her game.
What do you talk about with Guyron?
He gives me something to go on myself.
He gives you strength?
Yes, he gives me strength because sometimes I'm down, and if he calls me and he speaks to me, then I feel better because I can go on with my day sometimes. Sometimes I get up. I don't want to get up sometimes. Knowing that what he's been going through, I know it's not so safe in the prison down there sometimes. And it's just hard for me. I talk to him. Then I feel better. Because he told me, he said, "Mom," I said, "I don't want you to worry about me." He said, "Because I'm all right." He said, "I'm strong." He said, "As long as you know that I didn't commit this crime," he said, "whatever." He said, "I'll be all right. Because you know, Mom, I was at home. And I noticed that he was there when this crime happened. And I'm just hoping and praying that God will let me live to see him come home to be a free man."
Do you think Jim will pull it off?
Yes, I do. Because I know he's innocent. I have faith in God. And God is taking care of Mr. McCloskey to do the things he's doing.
I'm wrestling with God all the time. Whereas before, when I began this work, I wasn't wrestling. It was clear. It was pure. And now it's not pure. I still feel that he did call me, but yet, where is God? I haven't lost my innate core faith, but I start to question, why does he allow these things to happen? Innocent people, their lives and their loved ones to be crushed. It serves no redeeming purpose, as far as I can see. And allow the evildoers who foster these wrongful convictions to prevail time in and time again. And you know what I came away with? Only one thing that Christ talked about in the Beatitudes, that rain will fall on the just and the unjust. That's just the way it is.
The justice system is an equation with too many variables. There are too many points along the way where mistakes can be made.
John Farmer, the former Attorney General of the state of New Jersey.
You can't have a system that has as much capacity for mistake as ours and not try to fix it.
People are going to be somewhat surprised to discover that a man or woman can actually be framed in this country for whatever the motives, and that the whole system will kick in to help the framing of the man, and this innocent man can be sent to the chair or to prison for life. That's out of George Orwell, isn't it?
Yes, and obviously should never happen. Should never have happened. And the fact that it has should be a matter of grave concern.
And what do you think of Jim?
the potential for mistake is always going to be there. So the system needs a safety valve. It doesn't have one. And so that's what Jim provides.
Well, same old story.
Not in.
Nobody home.
Nobody home.
I will say this. This has been an unusually unproductive day.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It's been 5 months since I've been back here to work on this case, and I'm knocking the rust off. That's all. Yeah. Knocking the rust off.
Garen Walker remains in jail. So do 18 other current clients of McCloskey. Statistically, his strike record is superb. Only 5 dud cases out of nearly 100 investigations. Each year, over 1,000 convicted murderers beg Centurion Ministries for help. Just 4 new cases will be opened each year. How does this 60-year-old bachelor with the instincts of a Sherlock Holmes, the persistence of a Poirot, and the inspiration of a higher being manage to keep it up? God only knows.
I'm walking in darkness more than in light. But, you know, in the midst of walking through this darkness, I do lean on God. That's the only thing left. Isaiah chapter 59, he talks about how justice is turned back, for truth has fallen from the public squares. The Lord saw this, and it displeased him that there was no justice. The Lord saw that there was no one to intervene and wondered why that was so.
I'm in my 22nd year, November, I'll be 23. I have a 60-year sentence. I live every day as if tomorrow I may get out of here. With McCloskey, I say I have an 85 to 90% chance in regaining my freedom because I do have somebody that believes in me, somebody that will fight with me. Without them, realistically speaking, this could be the rest of my life.